Hello, and welcome back to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Tricarci, and today's topic is IPOs. With the outsized performance of several recent listings, the IPO buzz is getting louder, and signs are pointing towards that infamous window opening up. So I brought in Sherry Major, KPMG's national leader of capital markets readiness this week, to explain what we're seeing, how to time the market, and why preparing for an IPO is actually a lot like preparing for your first kid. Equal parts exciting and overwhelming. Sherry Major, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Sherry, last week you were at the New York Stock Exchange and I think a few other cities hosting your live IPO bootcamp sessions. So for our listeners who missed it, what exactly is the IPO bootcamp and what were the vibes like last week?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a series that we hold all around the country. So it's a half day educational workshop for pre-IPO companies that are looking to learn more about the process. And we bring together advisors from across the ecosystem. So think investment banker, attorney, exchange, obviously the various capabilities that KPMG brings to the table, as well as, you know, investor relations, various, tools and systems that companies leverage during the process. So really a whole host of specialists to share their expertise in a panel format. And we, you know, take Q&A from the audience. And really, it's just to help them understand how to begin and what the process looks like and gives them a taste of some of what's to come.
That sounds like an awesome session. I've never been to the Stock Exchange. I would love to go. And I saw you were on the New York Stock Exchange TV. So thanks for gracing us with your presence on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Very cool. So where can our listeners go, Sherry, to, like, if they want to attend? Is there a place they can register? How does that work?
Yeah, so we have an external website on our kpmg.com page. So if they look for capital markets readiness, they'll see a list of the locations and a contact to reach out to get the invitation. So, you know, I did mention this happens all around the country. So after San Fran in June, we'll take a bit of a pause for the summer. And then we'll pick back up with events in September. So not all of the registration links are currently open. So it's good to check our website and to reach out for information as the, you know, events get planned.
Perfect. We can throw a link to that website in the episode description just to make it super easy for people. But in the meantime, Sherry, I want to have our own little mini bootcamp. And I want to start by talking about the IPO market. You know, on this podcast, the last couple episodes, if I think about the topics, it's been, you know, Chair Atkins and the SEC's changing priorities, tariffs, and the economic uncertainty that those have caused, regulatory shifts, et cetera. So how is that translating to the IPO pipeline?
Yeah, well, certainly economic uncertainty is never good for the IPO market, and it has created a lot of volatility. So if we just think about 2025, the year started off really strong from an IPO perspective. January through March, we're really on a good trajectory, you know, more activity than what we saw last year. But then, of course, April came along and a lot of uncertainty was introduced. And, you know, companies that were in the pipeline and in the process were being cautious and, you know, often putting their IPO on hold. I will say we've seen what looks to be like an IPO window opening here over the last couple of weeks with some, you know, renewed activity from the IPO front. So not only is it important to have companies go public, but to have strong after, you know, opening trading. And so that is something that we've seen here recently with some of the IPOs in the last couple of weeks is good momentum on their IPO price. So although uncertainty is never good, I do think there has been some stability introduced here in the marketplace so that companies can actually have some visibility into what they're getting into if they actually go public in the current time frame. But the window is always opening and closing. And so I think what's important for companies to understand is if they've got the strong business fundamentals and they've done the work to get ready, they can have a successful IPO regardless of what's happening with economic conditions, because we do know they change very quickly.
Yeah, it kind of seems like we've been in this mode of like, hey, wait for the next half, you know, for the last couple of years when it comes to the IPO market. As you mentioned, companies are always trying to time up that infamous IPO window. So you said, you know, based on some recent IPO activity, it's looking pretty good, right? Especially with the post-IPO performance of those companies. What are you looking for in the next, you know, days, weeks, months ahead to tell us if that window is, you know, all the way open and how long it might stay open for?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball and could predict the IPO window.
I didn't tell you. I always ask my guests to bring a crystal ball. It's something I always do.
Yes. You know, I do think companies should certainly keep an eye on who's going out and how they're performing, because that is a really strong indicator. And I think it's also important to know that, you know, as we get closer to summer, summer tends to be a quieter time for IPO activity with, you know, a lot of people taking vacations, et cetera. It's just not the hottest time to IPO. But then things do tend to open up in September, October again before we get into the holiday season. So I do think, you know, companies need to keep an eye on various indices. So whether you're looking at, you know, the S&P or whether you're looking at the VIX rating, so the volatility index, and really just how stock prices are trending for public companies and, you know, in their current sector. Those would all be things that I would recommend that companies stay close to, as well as talking to their bankers, talking to investors, and really getting a sense for, you know, what they're seeing in the marketplace as well.
That all makes sense. And, you know, to your point, there's also all the macroeconomic things that are looming. And, you know, we've got some big decisions coming here shortly with Fed, with the interest rates and so on and so forth. So I'm sure folks will have a close eye on that as well. But of course, Sherry, the flip side of being ready for the market is that companies also need to make sure the market's ready for them. And on this point, I keep hearing about a company's equity story when I read about, you know, IPO and IPO readiness. Can you explain what an equity story is and what makes one compelling?
Yes, absolutely. So the equity story is really what is the value proposition of this company that's wanting to sell shares for the first time to the public markets. And it's, you know, what is the unique differentiator, whether you're bringing something new to market that doesn't currently exist, whether your growth is, you know, impacted by something unique, whether it's entering the global markets, expanding new offerings. So it's really being able to articulate why an investor should be interested in your company, why an investor should be willing to invest and hold stock in your organization. One thing we're seeing is that companies are having a lot more meetings with investors a lot earlier in the IPO process. So think even before they get into an active IPO process, companies should be testing that story with investors to see what's resonating, maybe what's confusing, what needs to be tweaked or tailored. And it's a lot of fine-tuning around not only having strong business fundamentals, but being able to articulate what those are.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, with that, I want to pivot now to the IPO readiness process, because takes a lot of work to even get to that point, you know, where you have the equity story and you're tweaking it and getting investor feedback and you're ready to strike when that window opens. And, you know, our listeners know that I love a good analogy. And all I could think about when I was researching this topic is that going through an IPO sounds a lot like having your first child. You know, there's a ton of prep, it's expensive, you've got a lot of people supporting you. And when that baby comes, you realize your life has just changed forever. So seems fitting, as we're going to get into, but before we like go through the detailed steps, I want to ask you to just give our listeners an idea of what to expect when they're expecting an IPO. And I want to ask you, what does that full journey look like? You know, just at a 30,000 foot level from initial readiness through post-IPO execution.
Yeah. So if we think about maybe a high level timeline, I typically encourage companies to be really thinking about that readiness journey roughly 12 to 24 months out from a potential transaction. And the reason I give a range is because all companies are at a different stage of maturity. And so, you know, some have more to do to be ready to really face the regulatory and the investor scrutiny of being public. And some have already been operating in that manner and, you know, need to maybe focus on a few key areas, but, you know, potentially have already been maturing in that same manner. So really thinking about corporate housekeeping, getting financials in order, doing appropriate hiring, and really, you know, crafting that equity story and fine-tuning that message. Those are some of the things that a company is going to do in those early stages. And then once you're about 6 months out from an anticipated transaction, that's when the really hardcore IPO process begins. So typically that started with an organization kickoff meeting where you bring the bankers, the attorneys, the accountants, you know, all together with the management team to really start the due diligence process, start the S-1 drafting, and really embark on that process with the SEC, with the exchange. And that can take, I would say, anywhere from 4 to 6 months. There is some back and forth that happens with the SEC. There's going to be, you know, the roadshow with investors, and then ultimately, ideally, pricing and trading. So once that happens, then you're, you know, like you said, the child has been born and you're off to trying to make sure you can keep that child, you know, growing and thriving. And so it's meeting, you know, filing deadlines, meeting, you know, what had you indicated to investors was going to be your growth trajectory, and really meeting those metrics and proving that performance and really creating credibility with investors. From that day on, I mean, you're in the limelight, you're a public company, and you're, you know, being held to a standard of really living up to the promises that you made during the IPO process.
Yeah, it's a long journey, 12 to 24 months, as you mentioned, a lot of prep, a lot of moving parts, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, from what you just described. Talk about how important it is to have a solid project plan and, you know, structure around the project in terms of who's leading it, who's involved, how you get everybody on the same page.
Yeah, definitely. I can't underestimate the importance of project management. This is, you know, a very big endeavor, and it involves a lot of people and a lot of competing priorities. And so I do think it's important to have someone who's at the center of that. And I think best case scenario, your project manager is someone within the organization who's at a, you know, senior enough level to really deal with challenges and get people to, you know, to, I guess, live up to their, you know, their expectations. I typically see someone, you know, at that controller level. Maybe it's someone on the attorney team. Maybe it's someone in corp dev. Those would be, you know, three of the key places where I see companies sourcing their project manager. You can also hire an outside project manager, which is, you know, something that KPMG provides as support. But I do think even if you're doing that, and I think the benefits from outsourcing it is you can find someone who's got expertise and going through the IPO process and partnering them up with someone internal who can actually pull those levers that need to be pulled, I think is a really good way to structure the project management team. But essentially, there are timelines to be met. There's still the need to, you know, do your day job and run the business. And this is just added on top of it. So if you can carve out someone internally whose full-time job becomes project managing, at least for a period of time, I definitely think that helps the process. Because you can only anticipate so much, right? You can anticipate a lot, especially if you've got someone who's been through it before, but there's always going to be the unknown.
Yeah, I can relate to this one personally, especially with the pregnancy analogy that we're going with. And my wife's probably going to kill me for telling this story, but I'm the example of when you don't have a good plan and, you know, these surprises, as you mentioned, pop up. We were moving back to Cleveland when my wife was like 8 months pregnant and we were in the middle of a renovation. So we moved in with my parents, which maybe that was mistake number one. The problem was the hospital that we picked was on the west side of Cleveland where our new house was going to be, but my parents live on the east side. Naturally, you know, my wife ended up going to labor smack dab in the middle of morning rush hour. And making things worse, there was a major accident on the highway that we needed to take to get to the hospital that morning. So I was literally in gridlock traffic and I'm like one step away from, you know, how do I deliver a baby? YouTubing that. So anyway, long story short, I called 911 to get an escort. They told me to get off at the nearest exit so they could send an ambulance. So I'm cutting people off. They're honking at me. I'm like, if you guys had any idea what I was dealing with right now, but we made it. I mean, we made it to the hospital. It was not the one we were planning on going to. And it was not in the best part of town. I'll just put it that way. But at the end of the day, after rolling into that hospital, very hot and a very stressful delivery, everything did work out. Everyone's healthy, which is the most important thing. But needless to say, it was a brutal experience. And if I could do things differently in hindsight, I would. And so I tell that story because it's going to transition to my next question, which is, you know, speaking of do-overs, like when you talk to companies and they look back on their IPO journey, what are the most common things you hear them say about things they wish they could have done differently to make the process a little less stressful?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say one of the key things is that companies do say, you know, I wish I had started earlier. I wish I had had more time to operate as if I was public, even before I was public. I would say also surprises sometimes pop up around financial statements and financial information. So when you're a private company, you're getting generally an AICPA audit. For a company going public, they have to upgrade to what's called a PCAOB audit. And what that means is there are new rules around auditor independence. And sometimes surprises can arise there, which means, you know, you either need a period of time for independence to be cleansed. It could mean potentially needing to change auditors. And that's extremely disruptive. And so getting ahead of that, having early conversations with your auditors around your thoughts around a potential IPO timeline, making sure that independence from a public company perspective has been maintained, those things are extremely important because they can derail the timeline or be extremely disruptive and costly. And then just in terms of, you know, hiring. I'll give two examples. So there's a requirement to have an independent board and fill various committees on the board. And those people can sometimes be hard to find with the right experience, you know, the right background. And so companies shouldn't underestimate what it's going to take to really round out your board appropriately. And then think internally, right? The right skill sets that you want to bring in-house. So an example would be, you know, you're going to need someone with SEC reporting skills. Well, those people are in very high demand. And sometimes they also can be hard to find and hard to acquire and bring in-house. And it is really a good idea, I think, to bring that role in-house while you're preparing the S-1, because that is an SEC reporting exercise and getting them involved early before you're public can be good. So those would be, you know, just some of the examples of things that I think companies find maybe surprisingly challenging or surprisingly time consuming that they hadn't anticipated.
Yeah, those are excellent observations. I think a lot of people understand, hey, I've got to go from AICPA to PCAOB, but your point around independence and potentially having to switch auditors, that is maybe more of one of those sleeper issues that, like you said, catches a company by surprise. So I'm glad you mentioned that. But maybe this is a good time to transition to the project. And, you know, if I'm listening to this, like, okay, how do I identify these things on the front end so that I can prepare for it in my timeline and make sure I'm not going to get derailed? And I know, Sherry, we like to start with an IPO readiness assessment as, call it, one of those early steps when a company's thinking about getting on this IPO journey. So what's the most effective way to perform that, you know, I'll call it health check on your company to identify some of these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is where, you know, a firm like KPMG can be extremely helpful. So what we propose is this readiness assessment that essentially brings a cross-functional team with a breadth of expertise. So think reporting, and that's, you know, accounting, financial reporting, management reporting, tax reporting. So a lot of different areas of expertise. We also will bring in folks with a governance lens that focus on, you know, what are your boards and your committees need to look like? What are some important policies and procedures to implement within the organization? And really getting down into controls and SOX and internal audit. We'll identify gaps from what's required to be a public company, as well as provide recommendations on how to address those. And those recommendations will also focus on what should you prioritize, what's the level of effort in remediation. Some things can be done quickly, some things might take several months, some things you want to do before the IPO, some things can wait till, you know, while you're in the process or even after. But that can be accomplished in about a 3 to 4 week timeline. And I think it's a good way for a company to sort of kick off the process.
This, to me, seems like a quick and easy way to get your arms around the full process. And then, you know, like we've said, make sure you have a plan and probably a backup plan for everything that's ultimately going to end up on the project timeline. So Sherry, what do we, you know, we've talked about the audit. I don't want to spend any more time there, but like, what else do we typically find from this readiness assessment that you would say are like critical to have remediated before going public? I mean, the things that come into my mind based on where I sit would be like internal controls and internal audit. So I don't know if you want to comment on that. And then I'm curious, what do we typically find from like a technology or just data infrastructure perspective? Like, do we tend to see companies upgrade their systems, you know, to meet these increased demands and the faster close times that come with being public?
Yeah, absolutely. Two really key areas. So maybe let me start on the controls front. So companies don't have any specific SOX or Sarbanes-Oxley controls requirements until after they've gone public. But I do recommend that companies get started on that controls journey. So taking an assessment of the current state of controls and where do they maybe need to be enhanced or maybe just put in place altogether. Sometimes there are controls that just don't exist that should be in place, certainly with a focus on, you know, financial reporting and disclosures. And I think, you know, the technology actually interplays with the control environment. And so I think a few things that companies need to think about is, are you on the right IT platform to allow you to scale and to present accurate results and present data timely and really have controls embedded within the systems? So that could mean, I mean, I've seen companies have to transition to a more robust ERP. So think, I don't know, maybe going from a QuickBooks to a NetSuite or, you know, something along those lines. And that's not something you want to do in the middle of an IPO process. So you want to do that well in advance so that you have a chance to test it and make sure you can actually, you know, produce data reliably, accurately, timely. And then really thinking about the control environment. So much today is, you know, done systematically, and you want to make sure you've controlled access to systems, that you've, you know, built in controls, and that you've got preventative as well as detective controls. So the more you can embed within your system infrastructure, the less you need to rely on manual controls, and it just makes that process more efficient and more reliable.
Okay, so let's move past the IPO readiness assessment. You know, let's assume you've remediated everything that needs to be remediated before going public. And at that point, you mentioned the next chapter, or maybe trimester is the better word here, is drafting and filing the S-1 registration statement with the SEC. And sure, you mentioned earlier that's a 4 to 6 month work stream in and of itself, you know, as you're compiling detailed business narratives, risk factors, MD&A, audited financials, legal disclosures, and then iterating through several rounds of SEC comments. It's so extensive, in fact, that we're actually going to do a whole separate episode on it next month. So stay tuned for that. And for the sake of our conversation, I want to press fast forward. So the S-1 goes effective. You're ringing the bell or, you know, drinking champagne in Times Square, as the case may be, on listing day. And then life begins as a new public company. And sticking with my theme here, what are some surprises that companies face in that first quarter, that first year of being public that are new or different from when they're preparing to go public?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, hopefully a company has really set the stage for success before the IPO. But we all know, like, the world is not perfect and not everything gets accomplished leading up to the IPO. But some of the key things, right, is making sure you have the right people and the right amount of people on your team. The level of effort that it takes to report timely and regularly with, you know, meeting all the requirements should not be underestimated. And the last thing you want is for your team to be racing from quarter to quarter, right? And to really never get out of that mode of closing the books and reporting and then starting it again. And so I do think making sure you've got processes that, you know, you've tested under the timelines that are required as a public company, and that you've really upscaled your team in terms of number and skill set is one of those key things that I think makes life as a public company more manageable. And there's always going to be processes to be enhanced. And it can be, you know, we talked a lot about accounting and finance, but it's relevant in legal, it's relevant in HR, in tax. So really, that infrastructure to be a public company is so important. So if you didn't get to build it all pre-IPO, that becomes a big focus during the IPO, you know, during the public process, because nothing shines a light on sort of inadequate people than really racing from deadline to deadline. So I think, you know, that's really important. And then just continuing to think about how are we performing against what we promised to the street, right? One of the things that I think companies, you know, have to have a strategy around is whether or not to give guidance to the street, right? And is guidance just one quarter out, you know, predicting what you're going to deliver on in the next quarter? Or are you giving guidance for the next year? Or are you really not in a position where your business is predictable enough to be able to give guidance? Because once you set those expectations, it's extremely important to deliver on them. That's an area that I think companies, you know, struggle with. And sometimes it's better to not give guidance than to give guidance and miss it. So I think that can be surprising. And even just dealing with bad news in the public limelight. So you'll become, you know, a bigger scrutiny for litigation and maybe activism, right? And not every company and every executive has had to deal with those challenges in the public limelight. And so I think that can be very surprising for companies of how do you deal with negative news and how do you not be, you know, overly reactive or just short-term focused and really sort of smooth out the bumps in the road, because every company is going to deal with challenges, but it's how you articulate what you're doing to address it and how you're mitigating that for the future that I think helps give confidence and to the investors. So those would be a couple of things that I think, you know, public companies get surprised by and really have to learn how to deal with it.
Yeah, I remember watching an interview with a CEO who was saying that as a private company, he was always talking about best case scenarios. And then when they went public, he spent most of his time talking about the worst case scenario. And it was in the context of providing guidance and managing expectations. And he basically said that he realized very quickly he needed to manage the business so they could meet and raise expectations versus focusing on delivering some outsized growth, you know, on an individual quarter, because the public markets love predictability. And I actually think that story fits perfectly, you know, with our analogy where the IPO, the S1 is like the baby. Because as parents, I think we're oftentimes focused on the worst case scenario for our kids. And then we manage or parent to prevent that from happening, obviously. And I think that's a good way to cap off the conversation. And I want to say thank you, Sherry, for coming on and providing us with all this great insight. I think it's going to help our listeners achieve their best case scenarios as they embark on their own IPO readiness journeys.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Many, many thanks to Sherry Major for joining me fresh off her whirlwind IPO bootcamp tour. She's been coast to coast helping companies gear up for public life, and she brought a ton of great tips to the pod. So if you're interested in all of those, make sure to check out the full episode. But let me give you my three key takeaways from our conversation. My first takeaway, the IPO market may finally be stirring. After a long stretch of caution and false starts, we're starting to see real signs of momentum. Recent listings aren't just making it out, they're performing extremely well post-IPO, which helps build confidence across the entire market. But with economic uncertainty and interest rates and geopolitical factors very much in play, the window can close just as fast as it opens. So the key is for companies to stay close to the data. Track volatility indexes, monitor peer performance, and keep the dialogue going with your bankers and investors. My second takeaway, readiness starts long before the roadshow. So if you want to be able to move when the timing is right, you have to do the work up front. That means not just polishing the equity story, but getting the right governance, getting the right talent, and getting the right financial infrastructure in place 12 to 24 months ahead of time. So this is a very long-term project. And the companies that do best are the ones that already operate like they're public well before they actually are. And so in our experience, one of the best ways to kick off this path to public is with an IPO readiness assessment to identify gaps, prioritize what matters most, and importantly, lay out a strong plan to close those gaps. This readiness assessment can be done in as little as 3 to 4 weeks, especially if you work with our team at KPMG and use our proprietary readiness assessment tool. And my final takeaway, the IPO is just the beginning. Once you ring the bell, the demands don't slow down, they accelerate. You've got earnings calls to prep for, close timelines to meet, controls to test, filings to submit, and on top of all of that, you have to keep the street happy. And it's critical that you plan up front so you can build for sustainability and avoid burnout, because that first quarter as a public company sets the tone for everything that follows. I'm Nick Tricarci, and that's The Bottom Line. If you want more on IPO readiness, check out KPMG's Capital Markets Readiness webpage. I put the link in the episode description. And be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and reach out if there are any topics you want us to tackle in future episodes. Or if you want to talk about your own path to going public, we would love to hear from you. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you later.